I'm Lena.
I'm Grant.
And this is
Whiskers.
We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
Hello, everyone. We are back. Happy holidays.
Yes.
It's the holidays.
We are in the holidays.
I get my ducks in a row. This is coming out on Thanksgiving. It's the holiday today.
Life's been a little crazy lately that, like, when we were at the dentist last week and they wished me happy holidays, in my brain I'm like, what holidays coming up? And then I was like, oh shit! All of them! I feel like I've skipped a bit of time.
So that got me thinking, in all of SeaQuest's 3 seasons, they never do a holiday episode.
No, we don't get a holiday episode. Like,
there is an episode with ghosts because it aired on Halloween.
Yes, it's
great. But, like, they don't go trick-or-treating. No one's doing a pumpkin carving contest in the mess hall.
No.
That's the sort of thing I'm talking about.
And this is, like, the 90s was, like, peak time for, like, holiday gift exchange, Secret Santas on TV shows. So it's kind of surprising.
So, yeah, the question I was going to ask is, like, if you were to do a SeaQuest holiday episode, what would it have? And you want a Secret Santa plot.
I feel like a Secret Santa plot would do well.
Right. And obviously.
In any of the seasons, honestly.
And the final bumper, the stinger on the end, is someone like unwraps a live fish and they know who their Secret Santa was.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
It was Darwin.
It doesn't matter who it is. That's the best gag you're going to get. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, thank you, Darwin. Yeah. I really wanted this. It's not quite alive anymore. But appreciate the thought.
Yeah. I would love for there to be a Thanksgiving episode of SeaQuest just so it can end with Bob Ballard telling me about the real history of Plymouth Rock.
If they would have done a Secret Santa episode, you would have had, like, everyone wondering, like, if theirs came from, like, Henderson. Oh, no, Henderson got me this. Yeah, and then eventually, like, it comes out that, like, all the boys were wrong.
Yeah, they all got each other.
Yeah.
And she's just like, I'm Jewish, actually. I don't do Christmas.
I got Susan down in the mess hall. What are you all talking about? I got her cozy socks and a robe.
It would be kind of fun if they revealed that Lonnie Henderson was Jewish the whole time. It just never came up.
That's why she and Tim didn't work.
Oh, it's a religious thing.
He was like, I can't.
He couldn't date outside the faith.
No, she was like, I can't date someone that crosses himself that much.
Whoever he is with has to accept Jesus Christ as their personal Lord and Savior.
Yeah.
And she wasn't going to cross that line. Like, not going to happen. No.
Not going to change myself for a boy.
Not this boy.
Not this boy. Now, there's a different boy on this boat, maybe.
Just enjoy your ice cream, you weirdo.
Your very, very melty ice cream. Why does your ice cream look like that?
Oh, the lights.
I mean, they did kind of have, like, technically, the end of season 1 was a worldwide holiday. That was made,
oh, yes.
Right?
Electric Lights Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Technically. Sure. I'm just going to throw that out.
Okay.
But yeah, what was your question?
What would you do for a Halloween episode?
Well, I mean, we had spooky ghostums.
I think it's a completely normal episode, but everyone is in costume as some sort of spooky creature.
What if it was like season 1 and they find out that Lucas never trick-or-treated. And so they're like,
he's just going up and down the corridors, knocking on different, like, lab stations.
The whole episode is because they found this out and he, like, refuses to get into the Halloween spirit and never has. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, we're going to bring Halloween to you. And so everyone dresses up and they all have, like, candy at their stations. And anytime he walks by, they're like, hey, Lucas. Take it to zero!
I want to see Ford as, like, full Bela Lugosi Dracula with, like, the medallion and everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. This all, like, backfires on them, though, because it just, like, makes him mad until, like, I don't know, Bridger's like, hey, let's carve a pumpkin together. And then it's like, aw, this is all he wanted. It was, like, why he hates Halloween is because his dad always, like, promised to carve a pumpkin with him, but didn't. He was never there. So now, ship daddy's there.
You know, the Valentine's episode would end with Ben and Katie, like, deciding to get remarried.
Oh.
That's how the Valentine's episode ends.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Lucas gets to be the ring bearer.
Yeah, and Juliana's in that one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's,
it's his date.
There's like, long-distance phone date with the Red Menace.
Yeah.
They have an internex date. We get to see what her avatar is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We find out, if they had a holiday episode in season three, that, like, Hudson is his favorite holiday is the 4th of July. He's one of those.
Yes!
Freaks.
Yes!
And so he's like, okay, guys, we are doing this. We're having a great time.
He is grilling artificially beef-flavored tofu in the mess hall for everyone.
Yes, and he's got, like, the apron on mm-hmm, and, like, mm-hmm. the...
Don't you dare kiss the cook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his swim shorts, and everyone's like, okay, we're here.
But you are expected to salute while he's wearing the swim shorts.
Yes.
Something,
yes.
Something,
you gotta salute
change.
The shorts, yeah.
That was... You know, I don't know if they did any studio filming in Universal Studios, but it was the era where everything else on Nickelodeon was, uh-huh. So maybe.
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 Yeah.
So speaking of scheduling, we're going to talk about episode 6 of the third season of Sequest 2032 today, Brainlock, and this aired originally in January 1996, the third to last episode of Sequest to reach air.
Yes. It's weird.
For a while, for certainly the rest of this calendar year, maybe a little while after it, we're going to be talking about episodes that aired before this one.
Yes. We like to do weird things on this.
In November and December of 1995. But for reasons that will become clear as we talk about those later episodes, mm-hmm. This is where it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons.
It makes a lot more sense if it's here than where they had it.
See, Brainlock is written by Naren Shankar, who's a PhD in applied physics and was associate producer of Sequest 2032. He was story editor on the final season of Star Trek The Next Generation, writer and executive producer on the second season of Farscape, executive producer of CSI beginning in the fifth season and beyond. He wrote 45 episodes of CSI. Mm. He also worked on Almost Human, For All Mankind's first season. Ah. He's showrunner of The Expanse. Ah. He's your favorite
this
guy.
This is my favorite guy in the whole world.
And, but this is a two-writer job. This is also the return of Javier Grillo Marxuach, back from Destination Terminal. A guy who knows our podcast exists.
Yeah. Hi! Hello there! Just in case.
So some of our listeners, I have to imagine at least one of our listeners knows, there is someone who posts every one of our episodes
yes.
to a Sequest subreddit.
Yeah.
Mr. Grillo Marxuach found the posting of our Destination Terminal episode and had some comments about the episode.
Yeah.
Which is to say, his is, you know, baby pictures as a television writer,
yes.
not what we said about it.
Yeah.
But, like, he knows we're here.
He doesn't listen to us, as far as we can tell.
He might have, and just not put that in his comments.
He might have.
I don't know.
But he knows we exist.
And we certainly know he exists, because anyone who worked on Dark Crystal Age of Resistance can just stab someone in cold blood, and I will still have their back for life.
Especially if it's the people who, like, decided to, like, cancel shit.
You mean the stab victim?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, stab, stab. They deserve it.
And this is directed once again by Anson Williams from Chains of Command, Brave New World, Potsy on Happy Days, if you will recall. Yeah.
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 So how's this one start, dear?
Underwater.
No, you don't say.
Hey,
this show?
Hey, sometimes that is rare for season 2 and 3. Just gonna say, we really like our land. We normally start underwater and then we end up on land, but you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we have a flashback.
Yes, to Fearless Fredericks. Already has the nickname as we begin.
Yes, and that she is at a sub fighter academy.
It's basically Top Gun. It's wet Top Gun.
It's wet Top Gun.
They cast Michael Ironside and they put in the Top Gun Academy, but for wet.
Well, here's the thing. There's more Michael Ironside in this hour episode than the entire movie of Top Gun. And no one's licking in anyone's mouth. In a gross way, okay? No one's doing it in a gross way. Just normal. Normal tongue.
But yeah, she is running this training course in her subfighter at subfighter school, trying to beat the course record, which was set by one of her friend/instructors, Noonan.
Noonan, what? That's a weird-ass name, dude.
Noonan here is played by Michael Deeg, who was one of the scientists in By Any Other Name. Do you think this is the same character?
We'll go with yeah.
I'm really going to doubt it, because I think all the scientists in By Any Other Name were turned into dust by angry plants.
Twin brother.
Okay, sure.
Identical twin brother.
The other...
We could also say identical cousins.
Sure, sure.
We love that one in some shows.
The other friend/examiner is named Nichols. He is played by Chris Miles, who previously appeared credited as just manager in Sympathy for the Deep.
He's moved up in the world.
Manager of what? I don't know. Is this the same character?
Yes.
It's more plausible that episode had a much lower body count.
Or identical twins.
Identical cousins. Mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm, separated mm-hmm. by 12 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes. They age well. Good mm-hmm, genes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's also a flashback, so it's not the whole 12 years.
Yeah, it's totally fine. So, she did a run, mm-hmm, I guess mm-hmm. we'll call it. She did, like, a run, and she had, like, a record pace.
Yeah, it's this run-and-gun thing. She's getting tailed and has to shoot him off, but she doesn't. She does this super cool move to save time by having them blow themselves up on a cliff face.
Yeah.
And Noonan is like pretty cheesed that she found this lateral thinking way to beat his time. But hey, time's time. She's the best.
And so as they're busy arguing, she doesn't go up fast enough and hits the cliff mm-hmm. and smashes her sub. And now water is like rushing in, and they're like, don't worry, we're sending a rescue craft. But the rescue craft has, like, the claw,
yes.
and it totally does what the claw does and fumbles her down a bigger cliffside.
While she's screaming and crying, she's terrified, she's drowning, all the water's flooding in, she's sure she's gonna die as the sea crab fumbles her.
I'm saying Noonan's driving that sea crab. Fuck that dude.
And yeah, this is after, like, even, like, their whole conversation is how Nichols is like got her back, like, eh, she's got you, Noonan. She's got ice in her veins. No fear, never. It's fearless Freddy. But really, who wouldn't be terrified at
that you're gonna drown to death?
This horrible, horrible accident. So yeah, it is 4 years later. We are back in the present, and she is having a cold one with these same boys as they reminisce.
Yes, at the officers' club.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Noonan is all, you know, reminiscing about and is like, man, you know, I was scared and I was just watching you and you like walked away. You're totally fine about everything. Nothing's wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I have a fucking chip in my head. Like, oh no, Vod say nothing, unscathed, but sure.
So yes, this is the Fredericks episode and what's going on with that chip business, the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As she's chatting with them, her friends let their opinion about chippies out.
Their casual ableism.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're saying this, not only to their friend who they know, their waiter has one too. And they're like, oh, shit. Okay. Oh.
Yeah. And so after they part ways for the evening, the two boys are walking outside, leaving the bar, and the waiter appears.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
they, you know, say some really fucked up shit to him.
Chippy didn't like his tippy. What the fuck does that mean, man?
Means he's an asshole. And so the waiter dude, though, something's definitely up with him, and he starts saying that he wants the starter codes, the starter codes for the Spectre. And when they're all like, what are you talking about? No. He grabs them and, like, holds a taser to his neck.
Yeah.
And so then the dude, like, tells him the codes, and he tases the fuck out of him anyways.
So there is the cold open. And there's some things in there that I want to circle back to. Because while it's the three of them having their drinks, they provide the exposition for the premise of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
The UEO's charter is set to expire, as it does every few years.
Which is stupid.
Which is a ridiculous way to run your multinational, multi-confederation organization.
Yeah.
And so Bourne is looking to use this as this is the time when we just throw our hands up and, you know what, let's dissolve the UEO. And then Macronesia will just snap up the entire oceans. We find out that, like, not only is Frederick's, like, pro, like, First Amendment, like, yeah, he has a right to say it, she kind of agrees with what he says?
A little bit.
And that never comes up again. Like, I'm very curious exactly what Alexander Bourne's platform is that she's into.
Yeah, it's a good question. Not sure. Not sure what it is.
But also, when we talk about, like, the sort of ableism of the day, it's the general idea seems to be that those who have these neural chips are incomplete, insufficient people. If they didn't have this crutch, they couldn't hack it. So having it means they're somehow lesser, they're incomplete. They don't have the strength of character to just fix their problems on their own.
Yeah, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, it's all fine, type of bullshit.
I mean, it's the sort of thing that anyone who's, like, gotten flack from an ignorant person about having, say, a prescription for a mental health issue would have heard. But it's not, it's allegorical, you know, it's a little bit of hardware attached to beneath your ear.
Yes.
Yeah. And as we come out from those credits, there's an establishing shot of another really cool undersea base.
Yes, it is the UEO, Secured Colony.
With no coordinates given. Oh.
Oh. And it is the most boring conference center I've ever seen.
At least parts of it, the most recognizable parts, because we've seen them before, are filmed at the Team Disney building in Orlando, Florida. It's
when they're in session, the green and pink room with
the
rock pit.
The big indoor/outdoor atrium with the markings on the walls because it is a working sundial as well, is pretty cool.
When I say the most boring conference center, I don't mean that, because that's, like, ugly as fuck, but it's like, what the hell's going on over here? It's not boring. It's not boring. It's all the interior shots of the most generic-looking place ever.
It's this big open lobby.
Yes, right, yeah. That they're having a reception at that's ugh, don't like it.
And Ford is in his fancy white uniform.
Yeah.
And so is the captain when we see him in, like, 2 minutes. But, ooh.
Mm-hmm. Freddie and Brody are not.
Nope. They are in their regular blues, and they are checking up on security plans. Brody is in charge of security for this conference, and Fredericks is backing them up, executing the plan.
Yes. Bourne is on site now for this meeting that's going to happen, and he's getting interviewed as he walks in.
It's Basil Exposition himself. He's back. He's here.
With the worst security guard. He's like, back up, back up, back up. But let's, like, seven, like, press people straight up to Bourne. Like, that's not good security.
But he loves the press. He's given his sound bites. He's in his element. Like, Alexander Bourne, while Dion is trying to take over the world through cash and technology, he is trying to conquer the world through the press. That's his angle. That's his wheelhouse.
Yeah. And so he's going on about how, you know, he doesn't think the UEO should get their charter back. the UEO does what it wants outside of all rules, and mm-hmm. it needs to be abolished, and we need to hand the planet back to the people.
Yeah.
AKA me.
It's individual constituent nations who, without a unified front, will all fall like dominoes before me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, as he passes, you know, Ford goes up to Hudson and is like, you know, if we did abolish the UEO, I would not have to come to this shit.
And they are framed inside this ice sculpture for the very fancy undisclosed location meeting, you know, with all the press in it. I just love that the opening text crawl says no coordinates available.
It says something like eyes only. And which is also very funny because, like, we've been to this location before and they've, like, told us where this location
is. San Diego Island. Or does the UEO just love this rotunda design?
And it's, and like, in multiple places.
They've built 8 of them. They're everywhere.
And they somehow want it to be colored like grandma's bathroom.
Uh-huh. With that, like, catwalk hallway going over that's open. That's cool. I like that.
Yeah. Why is it pink and green?
It was the 90s.
Nothing should be those shades of pink and green together. Like, it is literally, like, I feel like all the shit we're seeing right now for, like, Wicked.
Mm-hmm.
Linda! Elphaba! Which side are you on?
Galinda.
Yeah. Galinda! Mm-hmm. But it's those fucking colors.
Absolutely, yes.
Just add some glitter.
Who would Cynthia Rivio play in the Sequest reboot?
Oh, man.
I'm holding space for Captain Pritchard. Cold Lucas's pinky.
It's very odd. She could play Darwin.
Now, would this be a suit or just like a voice acting? She'd take Frank Welker's job or what are you envisioning?
When he's... She'd embody it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. She'd just be a dolphin. I could see it in my brain. It makes sense.
So yeah, Ford doesn't like to do these events.
Yes.
This is not what he got in the Navy for.
Yeah. Ford does not want to be here in, you know what? It's an ugly ass conference center. I get it, dude. You also gotta wear white. Like,
they look so good in their fancy white uniforms.
So impractical.
Well, sure, but that's not the question.
So, McGath comes up, though, to Hudson and starts a chat with him, and Hudson's like, should you be, like, talking to me? Because, you know, you shouldn't seem buddy-buddy with mm-hmm. the UEO as the leader of the UEO, I guess.
Well, part of the question is how militarized they are, and McGath's like, no, they love the military side, it's fine, it's just what you do with it, you know?
And Hudson tells him, well, you know, like, half the people here think you are running things like a police state, and the other half think you're a big wimp.
Must be hell talking out of both sides of your mouth.
I love that he calls him a big wimp.
Well, half the people think he's a big wimp. That's not the same thing as calling him a big wimp.
This is true.
He would call him a big wimp. There's no question about that. He just didn't in this case.
Well, when he says half the people think he's a big wimp, it's really the Hudson's like, it's me.
Yeah, yeah. We know which side of the divide he's mm-hmm, on. He's just not a voting member.
I'm of the big wimp club.
Yeah.
We have buttons.
And so, yeah, Bourne is painting the UEO in his press statements, in his like PR campaign as a fascist regime, even though his aim is global military dominance.
Yes.
Talk about talking out of both sides of your mouth here.
Mm-hmm. As they finish their little chat and Gath goes on his way, Dion swoops in.
It's a big party and every recurring character is invited.
And Dion's like, hey, Hudson, you want some cranberry juice? That is what you drink. And Hudson's like, not with you. And I'm over here like, what the fuck does he mean? That's what you drink? Do you really just drink cranberry juice? That's your drink of choice, sir?
Does Captain Hudson have an alcohol problem? And is Dion mocking him for it? Is that what's happening here? I mean, I think the joke is
Captain Hudson have a UTI that keeps coming back? Like, that's my question.
Yeah, what is the backstory between these two men?
Also,
where Dion knows all about his UTI history.
He's wearing white. There's no way this man is drinking cranberry juice today.
I think the joke we're supposed to get, the intended message, is that Hudson is so uptight at this lavish open bar event
that he's drinks
just going to be drinking juice.
Well, you know what?
Because he's that straight-laced and down to business.
He is going to have such acid reflux if he's just, like, drinking cranberry juice. That is acidic. We need to cut that with something. We gotta mix it up.
He's just going to be sucking on that ice sculpture for sustenance.
It's just so weird. It's just so strange.
They even bring up recurring characters that aren't here.
Yeah.
Like, we have to talk about what Mason Freeman is up to. Apparently, he's a free agent now. He's left the Dion organization.
Yeah, Dion's not speaking to him right now. They had a little bit of a lover's quarrel.
And we are going to trust him about that, apparently. I don't know. Sure.
Dion's like, you know, Bourne's not good for me and my company. Or anyone else. So, like, I'm on your side and you should be on my side. Cranberry juice?
Yeah, yeah. We have common interests here because Dion wants to preserve the UEO so he has markets to exploit.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what Greater Macronesia is going to do to his commercial interests once, you know, they run the world. What if it becomes a totally planned economy? Where's he going
to
go?
But then they're interrupted by this other dude coming up to thank Dion for the tickets to the Dion Demons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his basketball team that we were introduced to previously.
Mm-hmm.
And after this guy's, like, done thanking him for this bribe, Hudson, like, turns around and is like, and another thing! If you knew anything about basketball, that player would still be playing over in some other place.
It's Toronto.
Toronto!
Not that it's important because this is a made-up fake player.
Yeah.
So, but the idea stands.
You should have never bought it! I love that that's the thing that, like, makes Hudson, like, return around and be like, No, I'm gonna have the last word! Fuck this! Man, you know nothing about basketball.
Man knows ball. These little things are full of stuff that I do associate with Naren Shankar, which is like pulling together strands of continuity. Like, if there's anybody in that writer's room who's responsible for bringing back, like, the ban on beef, I bet anything it's Naren Shankar.
Yeah.
But yeah, this stuff about the demons... you know, the basketball team demons, not the actual psychic demons.
Well, you know, we've seen those a few times. Like, we could have demons.
And being like, hey, we've talked about this chip thing. We need to do an episode about this. We gotta do something. Like, that's all over his Farscape work. Like, his first credited Farscape episode was the one with Aaron and Pilot's shared backstory. That's so fucking good.
Yeah.
And you see the same impulse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. This dude makes it for the fans. Mm-hmm, the throwbacks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But not just for throwback's sake, to use it as a building block to make
it's,
something.
It, yeah. And yeah, it's like... Yeah. It's embracing the, like, world building to continue the stories.
Because it's not about, hey, remember Dion bought a basketball team. It's, hey, don't you think Hudson would be the kind of guy who really cares about basketball and basketball trades and free agencies?
And don't you think if Dion has a basketball team, he's absolutely using it to bribe people?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think he is. So, yeah. Meanwhile, back on the Sequest.
Yes.
Tony is with Henderson.
And it's study night.
Yeah. They are still studying away for Tony's officer exam.
He wants to become an officer, and more than that, a sub-fighter.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's studying current events and, like, reading the closed captioning, and he's right. This news broadcast is absolute nonsense.
Yes. He's like, I finally can read. And people stop speaking English. Like, what is this? Well, what are they talking about?
Well, when they identify this one political faction by two things they're against and nothing they're for, like, they need a better name. I don't know what's going on.
So Henderson is reviewing Tony's like essay, and she's like, yeah, I liked it the first time I read it, because this is basically plagiarized from someone else. You just took what they said and like reworded it.
It is his words, he insists, but Henderson recognizes it's this other guy's entire argument. You gotta have some thoughts, man. You gotta have a unique thought. Please synthesize something for me over here.
And like, you're Tony Piccolo, you have a lot of unique thoughts. Just gonna say, you can do it. I believe in you. So he's like, fine, I'll work on it again.
And there's this little exchange where, you know, he's like, man, why are you doing all this? Why are you still helping me out? And she says, well, you asked me to teach you how to read. And his response is, I didn't know when I asked you'd be teaching me how to learn.
Aww.
It's hard work, though. It's tough out here.
So now it's time to go to the dumbass gravel pit.
Yes, the sundial atrium.
Surrounded by Glinda and Elphaba. Of paint.
Oh no, they put him in a blender and turned him into paint. Oh, that's so sad.
And so McGath is speaking, making his arguments for why the charter should come back. And then Bourne interrupts.
Yes. Yeah, I don't think he has the floor. He should be gaveled down, but his big like public speaking voice sounds like he should be wearing a powdered wig.
Yeah.
The way he's forming his words to project across the room.
Imagine if, using the same set, the UEO and this, like, meeting, like, embrace the wig and, like, robe outfit. That would be amazing.
Well, they got one guy who's built for it. So yeah, he's making essentially the same points he was making directly to the press. Like, the UEO is just this monument to its own importance, self-interested and stagnant. Let's devolve power to our individual states where, you know, we can exercise it for the benefit of the people. McGath's closing line, when he finally like is like, hey, I have the conch, shut the fuck up, is, quote, without the UEO there is no guarantee of world peace. And some people clap and some people are like, come on, what the fuck, get out of here,
world peace,
low Ugh. Blow Ugh.
Who wants that? This isn't Miss Universe. Though we actually hosted that like 3 years ago at this very site, but they didn't come back because it was really hard to walk in the heels across the gravel pit.
Also, we had to black bag everyone because there's no location given. There's a logistical issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also really clashed with all their outfits. They weren't really feeling the Glinda Elphaba paint. So they take a break for the day. Ford radios Brody and Freddy to, like, hey, be ready, like, Bourne's leaving, because part of their job is to, like, escort his shuttle to safety.
And the other VIPs, I'm sure, they just aren't speaking characters.
Yeah. So we get a pretty cool shot of, like, Bourne's launch leaving the station, and it looks a lot like coming to the Rocinante.
It does.
Except, like, backwards.
It has a very similar profile to the TV design of the Rocinante from The Expanse.
Yeah, which is
Naren Shankar.
It's a beautiful ship. Love it. Got one up there. It's above Little Darwin.
It's above Little Darwin.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's flying out, turning the ship around, and then he knows, oh, it's a backwards. The nose is the fat end and not the skinny end. But as they're leaving, there are incoming
bogeys. Oh no!
I hate the bogeys. That's the worst thing that happens on a golf course. I hate it.
But Brody's like, oh no, it's fine. They're specters. It's all good. And Freddy gets like a weird flash.
Or like some sort of feedback into her chip. There's some sort of signal that makes her wince.
And she's like, wait, no, these are not like normal with us dudes. This is something else. And she moves out of formation and she's like, no, like, the president's being attacked. I know it.
And wouldn't you know it, it's her two old friends from the officer's lounge.
Yeah, they got tased by Taser Man.
And now they're opening fire on President Bourne of Macronesia and Lieutenant Brody of Sequest.
Of course, McGath is yelling at Hudson, like, who's firing on the president? As though, like, Hudson knows this just happened. And so Freddy's trying to, like, radio them to identify, and you know, they do, and she finds out it's her friends, and she's like, what the fuck?
And so she's trying to, like, talk them down and reason with them, because she knows them personally, but it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
And so, after some cryptic things are said, they engage in a dogfight that ends in a very dead Noonan.
Yes. She does, it's the same maneuvers that she did in her simulation, where, like, the one person's in front of her and the other one's behind her, and when they lock onto her, she jumps the ship up and behind, so that way he blows up the other one. And then he crashes into a cliff, and kills himself, too.
Yep.
So, she didn't have to shoot her friends.
She did kill them, though.
But, like, she didn't. They killed themselves.
But she definitely killed them, though.
But, like, she did it.
And that's a debate you have when they go to commercial break just now.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to listen to commercials for, like, Lexapro or the pudding that makes you poop good.
There's pudding that makes you poop good?
They're moving in on the yogurt market. Yogurt is last year. We're done with the yogurt.
Don't make me not trust pudding. I don't want to question, is this the normal pudding or is this the, like, pooping pudding?
I love you, dude.
I love you, too. That's, like, terrifying.
So we come back from whatever commercials it may be, perhaps your local auto dealer. And it's time for lunch with the boys. Piccolo, Lucas, and Timothy O'Neill in the mess hall.
And Tim is telling Tony that he's, you know, really impressed with, you know, that he stuck with all of this and is studying for his officer's test. He really didn't think he had it in him. But also, he cannot understand why he wants to be a subfighter.
Why anyone would want to get in a subfighter? They're death traps.
And Tony's like, because it's cool. And Lucas is like, yeah, but you can die. And I'm like, Lucas, you, like, built a stinger.
Yeah, there weren't any guns on it. No one shot at him in the stinger.
People except shot that one him time in the stinger. They shot at him in the stinger. The first time he went out, he got shot at in the stinger. It should have had guns so he could shoot back.
Well, that would have slowed it down. He would have done even worse in those trials. The extra drag.
You take it off for the actual trial. You have it on, though, for, like, safety beforehand. Just saying.
So we're chatting about Tony's test and his future and his career and his study buddy. We look over at Henderson chatting with some other crew members at a different table in the mess hall.
And, like, Lucas notices and is like, hey, buddy, are you, like, getting ahead of yourself? Not that I, like, know anything anything, but, like,
I've never been on a super train in my life. I don't know why you'd even bring that up.
You sure she's available? And Tony's like, what do you know? Do you know something about the rumors? I don't know anything about a rumor, but if there were rumors, maybe there's truth to the rumors, but I don't know anything and we haven't had this conversation and I wasn't here.
And there's certainly no Moroccan ambassador involved. Libyan ambassador? It was somewhere in North Africa, right?
Yeah. And there was no, like, Top Gun sucking face.
Never.
Never. Ever. No. Definitely did not see anything.
Lucas is so good at denying things, it's not suspicious at all. Not a single suspicion in the world.
It's amazing that he ever, like, got away with anything in front of Bridger for any amount of time. Like, it never lasted very long, no. But...
Well, he had Krieg to cover for him back in the day.
He had Krieg, he had the Biff...
Yeah, he could just blame it on the Biff.
Yeah, be like, oh, Biff. Biff did this. And whatever crazy story he'd come up with, Bridger was just like, yep, that sounds like the Biff.
He's biffering around again.
Yeah.
This is what... This is Lucas's big scene of the episode. This is a very minor Lucas episode. Yeah. A rare thing in Sequest.
Yeah, especially season 3. Very rare.
But this is good. He does it good.
Yeah.
He really... It's fun to see an actor do bad acting.
Yeah. It's such a good, like, panic. It's like, oh shit, oh fuck. I'm gonna go eat my role elsewhere. Fuck. Why did I sit down at this table? Not like we're roommates or anything. You can corner me about this later.
Are they roommates anymore?
They're still roommates.
They are? Okay.
Yeah, they're still roommates.
You could really throw a wrench into things if, like, oh, Lucas got a new room because he's an ensign now.
You could, but you could, I...
But they haven't, so I guess they won't.
I'm pretty sure they're still roommates. Mm-hmm. It's never been implied that they're not. Right. And I feel... I'm trying to think now if there was, like, an episode in their room. I don't think there has been this season.
Yeah, I don't think they're using the set, but we have no reason to believe that that's not still their room. They just aren't filming anything there anymore. Mm-hmm. They also aren't hanging out with Dagwood much anymore.
So McGath has to scold Hudson that, you know, it's all a mess and it's his own fault, and like, you're the reason Bourne's getting like shot at. This is insane.
Well, he's pretty stressed because, you know, the entire world government might be collapsing today.
Yeah.
And it sure looks like he used his military to try to assassinate the guy that's against him in this effort.
Yeah.
It looks really bad for him.
Yeah. So Freddy and Brody are also there as well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Freddy talks about a little bit about how, like, you know, I don't think... that they were, like, fully in control. Like, there was something, like, really suspicious, he said, that, like, just didn't seem right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because back in the bar, Noonan was a super anti-Bourne.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he implied, like, yay, Bourne! And it really doesn't line up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then Hudson's like, hey, I'm gonna chew Brody out. Because, like, Brody... thought the specters were fine and dragged his feet, and then he got shot and like lost power in his ship, so this is all his fault.
And when this is coming out publicly before the whole group, his response is, yeah, well, some of us have to make judgment calls. We don't have the consequences, you know, taken out of us by a chip. And like, oh, you said that to me?
Hudson,
about my special little one?
Hudson tells everyone to leave the room. He's going to murder Brody.
He will not accept this anti-Chippy perspective. He will not accept anyone believing that she is somehow lesser or less capable because she has an assistive device.
And he has a very interesting way of starting this scolding.
Yeah, how's that? How's that go?
I hear you're a ladies' man. When was the last time you had sex, Lieutenant?
And after a pause just brief enough for a Brody to wonder, what the fuck is this? Where is this going? He follows it up with, was there an audience? Because and he keeps going on that trail over and over. Do you appreciate your privacy, Lieutenant? Because that is something the chip removes. It's not just providing this emotional suppressant. It is a constant record of her actions and thoughts and feelings for continual calibration through the treatment process.
Yes.
All these years.
Which is something like they've never mentioned before.
No. But it makes sense. Yes. Like from the technical side of things. Mm-hmm. If it is like, I'm sure they're thinking about pacemakers. You scan them every few months to see if you got to make adjustments for something that's monitoring your day-to-day constant emotional shifts. It's probably taking records.
Mm-hmm. So that was a conversation Brody wasn't expecting to have.
He ends this tirade by shouting, that girl hasn't cried in 3 years.
A lot of people don't. Like, I'm going to say that's not that weird.
you're blessed by having someone in your life that's there to support and care for you and bring up your mood. She's the cutest dog in the world.
And I don't watch Bambi. Yeah. I can't handle it.
But yes, this whole point that you think the chip takes away something is a sign that she is lesser, when actually it requires a far greater strength of character than you can conceive of, Lieutenant Brody.
Later on, we get another flashback of Freddy's.
It is the same footage from the cold open flashback, only distorted and twisted because she's having a memory nightmare.
And so she wakes up from that dream and she's like, fuck this, something's wrong. And so she decides to go work on her chip right next to the moon pool. You know, this very small little thing. Of course, because she's like sleep deprived and shit. She drops her screwdriver into the pool. So we get Darwin.
Darwin is here and Darwin talks. Darwin's like, hey, you're tired. Dolphins are smart. We sleep when we're tired.
And we talk when we're sad or scared. I think he says we talk when we're scared.
Yeah.
And then cue Hudson coming in to check on Freddy.
Hudson is in the room when Darwin is saying his last three or four words. It counts. It technically counts.
I know Hudson's like, I'm not talking to the dolphin.
But the dolphin can talk at someone while he's in the room. And we're going right up to the line.
And Michael Ironside, I do feel like this would have been a good moment for you to be like, I got it, Darwin. Yeah. I'll take it from here.
But he doesn't. He does not talk to that fucking dolphin. He does not
even acknowledge the dolphin's existence.
There's a second thing that Michael Ironside never does. He never sits in the captain's chair.
No, he doesn't.
He's always standing on the bridge.
Yeah.
Like, Brody sat in the chair, an episode or two ago, clapped him on the shoulder. He never sits in that chair.
No.
That was from the actor. That was from Michael Ironside. He wasn't going to take Roy Scheider's chair. Yeah.
Because he's like, fuck you.
For as, like, clear as his feelings are about, you know, how he treated the role and, you know, you don't go to the press and say the things he said for the sake of the rest of the crew, is like, no, I'm the next guy. I'm not the guy. Maybe if there were a season four, he'd sit in the chair. I don't know. But he doesn't in what was actually made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Hudson has a little chat with Freddy about how she has to, like, let things go. And she's like, no, I have a chip. I don't fear. I don't scare. I don't rattle. I'm rattled. Something's wrong. Yeah. This is wrong. And he's like, well, fix it.
Yeah.
Fix it. There you go. Figure this out. You're in command now because, like, I just yelled at Brody and told him he's not in command of this investigation anymore. It's now you. So fix it.
And, like, it is clear in this, with all the stern words and stern looks, and there's barely an ounce of softness in this man. He is still finding ways to communicate. He loves her so much.
Yeah.
It's so clear. Like, it's in that, like, cold, solid. I'm reminded of a story from, like, my dad and my uncles. And, like, growing up in the neighborhood, the kids talking about, oh, well, when my dad gets mad at us, you know, he's got a paddle. Oh, well, when my dad yells at us, he's got a belt. What happens when your dad gets mad? And like, my family are like, he looks at us. And that's Captain Hudson?
Yeah.
Captain Hudson is my grandpa.
I don't want him to look at me. But like I do. But don't look at me.
Not like that.
You don't want to disappoint the man.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be on his bad side.
And, like, he shows that he cares by having expectations.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you know, like, he's on your side, is that he expects something from you.
Yeah.
And he will set you up to deliver on those. He does not, like, expect the impossible, but he recognizes that people can do the very, very difficult.
Yeah. So she does a video call with her doctor.
Yeah, it's maintenance time.
Yeah.
She's popping open her chip and, like, putting it in the little scanny thing and mm-hmm. starting up her vid call
mm-hmm.
with Dr. Slousen.
Yeah.
Played by Tom Nowicki, who's previously Mithor the Alien in Splashdown.
Yep.
Is this the same character?
I'm going to go with no.
Finally, some sense. Because that guy's super dead.
This doctor dude's like, oh yeah, I was going to actually call you because your readings are, like, all over the place.
And they're not supposed to be all over the place.
And he's like, you know what I think the problem is your implant is, like, set to the original levels when you first got it. And, like, things have changed. The levels have changed. We need to adjust things.
You might not believe it, but you are improving. Let's bring this to where you are now and not where you were then. This makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
It makes so much sense. They should have done it 2 years ago.
Yeah, I'm a little like, why haven't we done this until now?
Dr. Slousen, you suck. What's going on
here? Why? Isn't that part of your job, sir?
And this whole time, like, this interface is showing the scan of the chip data. And that includes this wireframe of a skull. And this skull is so angry.
It's so angry.
It's a terrifying skull.
That's what Freddy's soul looks like.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see. I mm-hmm, see.
Mm-hmm. Eternal screaming of a skull. And so he reprograms it. She pops it out, pops it back in. They're like, okay, let's talk again tomorrow. Cool. So now it's the next day. And it's time for, or not the next day, it's like 5 minutes later,
mm-hmm.
We're at the UEO meeting, and Dion gets a little beep on his watch.
Yeah.
That tells him, hey, you got a phone call, so he leaves to go take it, and it's the doctor telling him, hey, I reprogrammed the chip, and she's online.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Slousen's working for Dion, oh no, oh no!
Betrayal.
So we go back to commercial and come back with Piccolo shuttling Ford over to the meeting, and they have turbulence gags.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, you should sit down. No, I'm fine. No, it's going to be turbulence. You should sit down. I should have sat down.
There's a big bump. Ford nearly falls over, and he's like, oh, good recovery, Piccolo. He says, ah, same to you, sir. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Jokes!
But now, we have to have an argument.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We have to talk about Henderson and how she's been helping Tony and how Ford doesn't like that.
Well, it starts with, like, Tony being like, and thanks for being so understanding, the two of us spending so much time together. And Ford starts by keeping the secret, like, well, what does that have to do with me? What are you thanking me for? It's what she does with her personal time is her own business. Until he realizes from Tony's response is that, well, it sure sounds like I'm giving permission to these two to date, so let me severely overcorrect on that.
Yes.
And so that total 180 gives Piccolo the message that he needs without actually breaking the secret. The secret is broken. Like, he knows. He, like, gets it.
Ah, yeah, I see now.
Okay.
I got it. Okay. Okay. So Freddy is there,
mm-hmm.
And
in some sort of server room closet.
Yes,
with a window looking down into the gravel atrium
that is also painted pink.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And she is setting up a gun.
She's got her briefcase gun assembled bit by bit.
And her chip beeps.
It beeps. It goes in the scope.
She, like, puts, like, one in the scope,
yeah.
And then, like, it's still there, but, like, it starts beeping, and then, like, as she's looking through the scope, we are seeing, that she is seeing, like, a simulation, so they have reprogrammed her, so she thinks she's in, like some type of training simulation shoot people and not like legit holding a gun over people.
She lines up a shot and shoots this flat shaded polygonal man figure and like calls time just like she did on the training course 4 years ago. Yeah, yeah.
Now she doesn't actually shoot anyone here. It is all a simulation.
Right.
In the sense she thinks it's a simulation, she never actually pulls the trigger.
Right.
But they're setting it up.
And she is just like flat robot affect.
Yes.
Again, not that she has a wide emotional range, that's sort of the science fictional angle on this character.
Yeah.
But severely restricted even from there.
Yes. So meanwhile, Bourne and McGath are being interviewed.
It's sort of a combative interview. It's like a
combative press conference-ish thing.
It's like a debate without the podiums.
Yeah.
They're just kind of going at it in front of shared cameras.
Yeah. And Hudson sees Freddy come down the stairs and is like, ah, yes, press people. And
Bourne, I'd like to introduce Colonel Fredericks, Lieutenant Fredericks.
Who saved your life.
He's playing the press for the first time we've ever seen. Full of surprises, this guy.
Yes. When, you know, Bourne, because he's in front of the press, has to be like, oh, thank you so much. Like, you know, you are wonderful. And Hudson's like, well, yeah, the UEO is filled with wonderful people like her. Gonna deny that. Gonna deny that on camera. What you gonna do? What you gonna do, buddy?
Like, it's like McGath said at the beginning, even people who aren't so thrilled about the like one world government part of the UEO like the UEO Navy. They seem pretty chill with Hudson and all the other Hudsons out there.
It's like the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
They're typically like, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, all right.
That's fine. If we're gonna have like something,
then
you're typically fine.
Do rescues, and yeah, I guess I'm against drug smuggling. Sure. I mean, there are other ways to attack the problem, of course. But okay, sure.
Yeah, make sure people aren't like drinking and boating. That's
should really do that. Yeah, yeah.
Do you have enough life jackets on board?
We need guys to check that. Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
I would love the National Guard if they were just for like hurricane relief and shit. Yeah.
But we use them for other shit. Yeah. So they're on the shit list. So, Bourne and the press leave. And Freddy drops the case, kind of like snapping out of whatever's going on. You know, Hudson like hands it back to her and she kind of shakes her head like a wet dog, trying to figure out like what, something's weird.
Yeah, yeah. My brain bad. I got bad brain.
And back at the doctor's talking to Dion about her being like offline and now she's back online. And Dion's like, well, keep her online, like do what you gotta do. And he's like, if I do what I gotta do, she's gonna fry her own brain. And he's like, cool.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing is that Freddy does have such incredible strength of character that she has been resisting this control far more than expected from, you know, these plotters trying to hack her. But at the same time, we keep seeing from every Dion episode, his strength is in these systems that he overtaxes. And so he's constantly undoing himself by having... by, like, not understanding what the experts are telling him. Because he's the big business genius of the tech company. That must mean he's the expert in all of their stuff, too, naturally. What a show to be watching in 2025 sometimes.
So Brody goes to Freddy to apologize. And she goes off on him.
Yes!
She just is like, I'm not here for your excuses. You're just apologizing because you feel like a coward. And like says, if he ever endangers her life again, that will be the end of his.
She's getting so worked up. She's getting so mad that for a brief moment, her chip shorts out again. And in that moment, she produces an envelope of written orders and slaps it in his chest and says, yes. You follow this to the letter, young man.
Yeah.
I guess old man, but, you know, he was in stasis for 10 years.
Yeah.
Like his mom.
Does he feel closer to his mom now?
It runs in the family!
Is she still in stasis? Did they figure out how to cure that?
Is he older than his mom?
Maybe. It's hard to know. So back on the Sequest, Tony is getting ready to head out a few days early to go take his officer's exam, and he stops at Henderson to give her back her book thank her.
Yeah.
Thank her for all she has done.
And she's like, why are you going to go early? You can do more studying here. Like, well, I can do more studying there too. You know, they got libraries. It's all good.
She's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Come on, big guy. Level with me.
What's this? And he's like, well, I don't think the commander is very happy that I'm spending time with you. And she's like, well, he shouldn't be jealous.
Look at my boy Tony Piccolo here, being honest and open about his feelings and trying to manage the situation, because his response is, well, maybe he has reason to be jealous.
And, like, I didn't go into that with this, like, in mind. It just happened.
It just kind of happened. Like, I didn't know until I knew, but, like, I'm going to remove myself from the situation for a while. You guys are going to talk about things. I hope I'm going to take my test, and we're all friends here, because, like, we're being open. We're talking. Cool. Bye. And, like, I'm so proud of him.
Yeah, he has growth.
This is a really good acting moment. This is some of the best, like, dramatic acting I think we've gotten from young Mr. DeLuise. Because, mm-hmm. like, he really likes this girl. Mm-hmm. And he's
smitten.
He likes this girl in several ways and wants to have all of them, but knows he can't have all of them. And that some of them are going to be real complicated with the man who is his boss.
Yes.
Like, it's a complicated situation, and you see it all in his bearing and his face and the way he turns and when he turns. DeLuise did it. He did it.
Yeah. Yeah. Give that man an award.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he gives her a final thanks and says that, you know, no one has cared about what he wanted like she has.
Mm-hmm.
Aw. Mm-hmm. Aw. A buddy just needs to be supported. And so he heads out. Meanwhile, Hudson is having a video call with Freddy's doctor.
Yes.
And the doctor's like, yeah, I'm not seeing anything. Things seem totally fine and normal.
This is in a conference room that I'm pretty sure is where he first met Lucas, but they turned all the lights on this time. I think this is the same location.
Oh, I have to go back to that. I don't know. I didn't notice. Because, like, the room that Lucas was in was, like, bare and gigantic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think they're just filming from a corner instead of, like, straight on. So the size isn't as overwhelming. Mm. And, yeah, the lights are a lot higher up.
I feel like I need to go back and watch it to see. But Brody is in there, and Freddy shows up. And Hudson is like, hey, did you threaten Brody's life? And she's like, no.
And the doctor's like, I don't have any record of that. And so it's two against one. Like, what? He's not going to trust the chip doctor. So Brody is in the hot seat once again.
He is ordered back to the boat. He is taken off this assignment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And once he leaves, Freddy's like, thanks for believing in me, sir. And he's like, yeah, but, like, are you okay?
Are you okay, though?
Are you, like, really okay? And she's like, oh, yeah, I slept like a baby last night. I'm like, she's not okay. Okay. Freddie would not say that. She's not okay.
She'd never even mention babies.
And so she is sent on her way. Dion is pouring some champagne, celebrating the fact that Brody is being sent back, and gives a glass of champagne to Born.
Oh.
And the doctors in the background, they are all in on this together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But not just them, they are joined by Freddy. Ah!
Because she is being, you know, brain controlled to do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm,
and Dion decides to, like, show this off by telling her to drink champagne and then, you know, go strangle the doctor.
Uh-huh. And she is absolutely affectless, emotionless, full 100% robot in this. Does not care about choking this man out, who she has a, like, hopefully productive, up until he was under Dion Sway and hacked her brain, fruitful patient-doctor relationship.
Mm-hmm. And so the plan is that they are going to have Freddy kill McGath before he can accept the new charter. Because even if the charter gets voted in, if he doesn't accept it, it means, like, it's not going to happen, and that's the end of the UEO. And, mm-hmm, like, quite frankly, mm-hmm, that's stupid.
That's a ridiculous way to run the government. And he even says that, sure, they'll have the winning vote, and they'll put someone else in his seat, but whoever it is, no one would be able to play the game like McGath to make it all come together and stand. And, like, you're putting a lot of weight on the shoulders of a guy who really sucks so bad all the time.
Half the room thinks he's a wimp.
The other half thinks he's a jackbooted thug.
And so Bourne's like, but what if she turns on us? And Dion feels this in that she can't, because if she tries to remove the implant, she'll have, like, a seizure and die.
And so they demonstrate by giving her half a seizure and almost dying.
Yes.
Eyes rolling in the back of her head while standing. It's disturbing. It's freaky.
Yes.
It's very dangerous for our friend Fred. I think, actually, McGath sucks less lately.
Yeah.
Like, he's doing the job this week.
Yes.
And the last couple, like, there's over 2032, there's been a transition from McGath, the guy who always sucks, to, like, well, he must be doing something right to hold this world together all these years.
I think a bit of it is, like, when the season started, it was very, like, my hands are tied, I can't do anything, your accusations are unfounded. And it changed to, like, yeah, you're right, I just can't do that without more cause.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And a bit of, like, I guess, like, more showing the fact that there's, you know, the political game,
yeah,
right, that he has to play. And it's not that he is absolutely, like, unaware.
And that he understands, or has come to understand, that Hudson's loose cannon-ness is a card he can play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Henderson is yelling at Ford.
In a different conference room.
Yeah. she is mad and wants to tell people, mm-hmm, that they are in a relationship, because this is going on too long. And he's like, but you said secrets are sexy.
And her response is, no, I said dirty emails are sexy. Whoa. Okay. All right. All right.
What was your conversation? How did you get there?
I'm surprised it took Lucas this long to find out. I'm sure. I thought he's reading everyone's emails. You have a super hacker on your ship. You have to be cognizant of this.
Well, they might not be sending emails. They might have just talked about sending sexy emails to each other. But, like, Ford can't bring himself to type it because he knows Lucas is reading his emails.
Ford, like, pours himself a glass of red wine, puts on some Luther Vandross, and for inspiration pulls out a medical textbook.
So he can describe things, mm-hmm, in depth. Mm-hmm.
In their most proper terminology. Yes. That makes it sexy.
And so Henderson keeps yelling at him about how they need to put the truth out there with the crew. So, like, people won't, like, Tony won't get hurt. And he's like, yeah. Oh, Tony. Mm-hmm. I gotta care what Tony thinks.
Tony's gonna be my guiding light in my life. Sure. Tony fucking Piccolo.
And then she's like, Jonathan, just say it. You don't want to do this anymore. And he's like, there are so many things I want to say, and it's not that. And
I got to get out my medical textbook, let me tell you.
But that's going to take a minute, so let's make out.
He just pleads with her, like, please understand. You might not be able to tell all the time, but I'm trying. I am trying. And what starts as a breakup argument becomes a hot and heavy makeout session, yeah, in this other conference room.
Yes. All I want is for Lucas to open that door and be like, oh, shit.
God damn it. Fuck.
I can't go anywhere. Hudson invites me to do a thing, and then suddenly you're there kissing.
Every fucking time.
Never going on a mission again!
Commander, I respect you. Please stop putting the term vast deference in your emails. Lord almighty!
It was my favorite hobby, and now I can't read any of the emails because I'm traumatized.
Lonnie, keep it up. Thumbs up. You keep doing what you're doing.
Yours are great. Love the pictures.
And that's how Lucas got sent to Siberia.
He saw Krieg. It's okay. They were united. Brody's in the cafeteria. Dagwood comes over to join him with his giant bowl of fruit. And is like, what are you doing here? Thought you were, like, on a mission. And he's like, well, I've been reassigned to sit on my hands. And Dagwood's like, oh, I do that sometimes when they're cold. And then he bites into a banana.
The normal way, right?
Nope. He bites into the side of it with the peel on.
So they did that pineapple gag a while back, uh-huh. And they were like, yeah, that's gold. We got to do that again.
Somehow the banana one is better, I think.
What can we get Pete to bite next? Hey, Pete, what do you want to bite?
The banana is so, like, it's such, like, he did. He did that. We didn't fake it. He absolutely bit into that like it was the side of a sandwich.
I mean, this episode is the recipient of 2 DeLuise Did the Thing awards.
Yes. And this is such, like, a useless little dumb scene. Yeah. But I love it because of, like, the dude just actually bit into a banana like that. What the fuck? You can do that?
You shouldn't
because the peel's not going to taste good, but apparently you can.
So now we know that Griffin McElroy is just some just imitating his hero, Dagwood the Gelf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bananas?
Bananas.
Where's the regulator? I just want to know. What's he up to?
He's circularly evolved. He has gills now.
Yeah.
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 But it's not cool or special anymore. There's, like, hundreds of people with gills now, and he feels so sad.
Yeah, he needs a new hobby. Maybe it's giving gills to bananas.
What are they gonna do with them?
Swim? Obviously.
But Brody continues to be sad.
Yes.
And after lunch, he starts being sad alone.
Yes.
So he's curious about this envelope of printed orders he got, and so he opens it up, and out tumbles. Not a slip of paper saying, fuck off and die, Brody, I hate you.
No, but Xenon's earring.
Yes, the little circular hollow chip.
It looks exactly like Xenon's earring.
It does.
Which
it
is
does.
Also a chip and has very important information on it. It's the same universe.
Okay.
What?
All right.
What?
This came first, though. Sequest 2032 was before Xenon Girl of the 21st Century.
I know. I'm giving the context to the viewer.
Sure. Well,
to our listener of what the chip looks like. It looks like Xenon's earring.
I'm just saying that Xenon was clearly downstream influenced by Brainlock, the sixth episode of Sequest 2032, season 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Obviously.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
That's why she ate the banana like that in the sequel.
Yeah. Why was there never in Sequel, like, so in Xenon.
Yeah.
We got, like, futuristic, like, space music.
Mm-hmm.
In Sequest, all we get is under the sea jazz hooker singers.
Be nice to Serotonin. She's doing her best.
I wasn't talking about her. I was talking about Hitchcock at the, like, mine.
Ah, yes, yes, okay.
But yes, then there's Serotonin, the whatever she is.
Coffee shop music.
Yeah, I want more. I want, like, okay.
Well, there's Lucas's experiments in digital music in season 1.
There's that. Okay, we got that.
He does have his DJ kit on when the hotel eats him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think Crocker's just disappointed that in the time of, like, undersea, like, exploration that sea shanties aren't a bigger thing?
He tried. He put his whole heart into it that one day in like, from what I can tell online, the most memorable moment in all of Sequest is Crocker starting up a sing-along.
Missed opportunities. yeah, so he's got a chip, which means, like, wow, I got this chip. What am I going to do with this chip?
Curious. What is the point of this? What is the message I'm supposed to get here?
So meanwhile, Freddy goes back to that closet.
The server room.
Yeah, and puts her gun back together.
Filled in the suitcase gun.
And she is looking out over them having a meeting where they are talking about the charter.
They're delivering the vote totals. Each representative of a confederation is giving, you know, how many members of their confederation, yay versus nay. Mm-hmm. And the early voting looks really good for McGath. Like, some of these confederations are like 8 yes, 1 no. Like, yeah. Come on, we're racking it up the score.
So while this is going on, Hudson's like, yo, Ford, tuck in your shirt. Dude.
How far did things get in that office? I mean, there could have just been some tugging and squeezing.
Some skin touching.
I don't think they even got to skin touching.
Do you think his shirt's unplugged?
Just like grab him by the shirt and just pull him close.
I don't know. I think there was some back action.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back-tion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so Ford, after being very embarrassed that his shirt is untucked because this man would never show up to a function like this.
In his life, mortified.
He gets a call from Brody, who's like, hey, I know what's going on with Freddy, and like, I'm not alone this time. Lucas is also here and he's gonna back me up. And Lucas is like, I am here, yes, this is true.
Cause like, yeah, he's cracked that chip, he's hacking the mainframe, and like, oh fuck.
So he explains that like she seems to be getting controlled. It looks like she thinks it's a simulation, because the chip shows like a simulation of someone getting shot in that room that you're in right now.
Meanwhile, this is playing with the background noise of more votes coming in. Everyone is leaping into action to try to find her, to try to protect everyone, while a round of applause as the vote narrowly passes. I guess a lot of the late votes were more in the other direction.
Yeah. So Hudson tells Lucas, or asks him, like, can you shut it off? Can you take her offline? And he's like, well, it'll be dangerous. And he's like, do it. She knows what she signed up for with this. You gotta do it.
And so he's just shoving his way through the handshake lines to get to McGath and cover him, while all these delegates are just like, yay, we still have a government. We have a job. Yay.
As Lucas is, like, frantically typing away, doing his hacker stuff. And she goes offline McGath accepts the charter.
Yes, is a legally binding speech act. As soon as he says he accepts the charter, the UEO continues to exist. Hooray.
And Dion yells at the doctor that she's fighting back. You have to terminate her. And before they can do anything, Freddy comes into the room is like, not without this, you can't. And Dion tases the doctor and runs away.
Yeah, because she has taken the chip off of her neck physically. She's living free for the first time in years. As she chases Larry Dion up into the catwalks and ducts of this station.
Yes. And so he is running away, radioing for a shuttle, and they have the goofiest little, like, we run into each other.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Ah!
It's like a little bump.
He does a weird little hop. Yeah. I don't know why he does this. He's a silly man.
It's like red pandas. red pandas, when they're startled and they're like, oh! That's what it's like.
Except he has a taser. And
so he keeps like trying to like swipe taser at her like it's a sword.
I mean, it is a suspended catwalk. It is, you know, one person wide. And while he's facing off against a trained combat soldier, it is someone who is, like, dangling above a precipice, who had a horrible accident that involved sinking. And it is the first time she has felt natural fear in years. So there's nothing he can do but, like, take the shot. You know, he's got to be confident to try to survive and get to that shuttle.
And so, yeah, he's attempting to taser swipe her. He eventually, like, grabs her and, like, throws her over the side, and she's dangling from, like, the pipes.
Yeah, it's scary. It's scary.
And Hudson rushes in and punches him in the face.
Because he always has her back, and like, he reaches down to, like, grab her hand and pull her up, but he has to, like, emotionally talk her through. Like, come on, Freddy. You can do this.
Because she's scared.
She's scared. She hasn't actually felt the fear she's experienced in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Dion is arrested by Ford.
And Henderson.
And Henderson.
So eventually she throws her hand up to Hudson and he pulls her up and she's good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And again, it's the like, the tough love of Hudson. Like, he reminds her that he knows she can do it. It's not mm-hmm. It's not believe in yourself. Just, hey, recognize I've always believed in you. Are you going to make me a liar, Fredericks?
No!
You going to say I'm wrong?
No! What a disappoint! So later, Hudson is on video with Bourne. And Bourne's like, you know, I don't like being dragged into this. And if you think I was involved with that lunatic Dion, you're crazy. And Hudson's like, you know, well, we'll find out. He just got done giving a statement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So
you have 24 hours to surrender or I'm coming to get you myself.
As Dion gets, like, perp walked through this conference room again. It is the same conference room that I think was the Very Wet Lucas conference room.
This one might be, because it is a very long conference table. Bourne is like, well, maybe we should see if his statement, like, holds up before you do anything.
So, Dion is continuing to be walked through this facility to whatever sort of prison is waiting for him as these procedures go, or, you know, he's going to make bail in as soon as he signs the papers. Obviously, yeah. He's the richest man in the world.
Yeah.
But doesn't quite go down like that.
No, because you know who appears? Mason Freeman.
Mason Freeman comes out of nowhere. We thought he wasn't in this episode. They talked about him like he wasn't going to be here. It's a switcheroo. It's a diversion. As he shoots his former employer.
As Dion sees him and is like, no.
Bam. That's what you get. That's what you get for not giving him the stock options he wanted.
Mm-hmm. You made your boyfriend mad.
That's not his boyfriend. No. So in this sort of Jack Ruby situation, it is not the surgical strike and escape that he's known for. He's grabbed. He knows he's going to be grabbed. And it gives him some time to chat with Captain Hudson.
Oh, yeah. And Hudson's like, he's not dead. And he's like, he will be.
I love this man. This is my favorite villain. I love him.
He says something that's like... Like, Hudson's like, oh, well, this is quite the, you know, act to do for not getting, like, money or whatever.
Like, $100 million.
Yeah. And what does Freeman say? I didn't write it down, but it was something like, well, sometimes some quiet is good. Like, mm-hmm. I'm perfectly happy to go to jail for this for a while. Yeah. It's not going to last too long.
Oh, so that's the end of the main plot, but we still got to have our little bumper. We still got to have our end scene. And it's back on the Sequest in Hudson's quarters.
Yes.
Where the Secretary General is on screen as he tends to be.
Yes. And Freddy comes in and she is given a Medal of Accommodation.
Yes.
And Brody also comes in because he wants to be there to congratulate her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she...
He's extending his hand. He's learned a lot today. He's grown.
Mm-hmm. And Freddy is trying to keep it together.
Yeah. Yeah, like, she saved the entire world government for which she sails.
Yes.
She proved a low-key bigot on many fronts in Lieutenant Brody wrong, and he's starting to come around.
Mm-hmm.
Over the course of this show, I've come to enjoy Brody. but as one might enjoy a wrestling heel. I love to have this guy that I can reliably hate and have fun hating. And it is nothing against Ed Kerr. I think Ed Kerr does perfectly fine work.
Mm-hmm.
But
they just give Brody such, like, snippets of awfulness. Yes. That it's like, oh, gosh.
I keep Brody in the same pocket as the Regulator. You know, I just... There's always a way to put him in the conversation and make it better.
Bananas?
Bananas?
And so Brody leaves, and Hudson talks with McGath for like another 2 seconds about how Dion is in intensive care and is going to have surgery. And then like he starts messing with his vid cam. Like, so
we're sailing through a tunnel, ocean tunnel.
I can't see you. And you like hear McGath being like, but I can see you fine, as like it clicks off.
So then he leaves his own office to give his protege, his surrogate daughter, perhaps in some ways, a private moment to cry for the first time in years.
Before he goes, he says to her, if there was ever any doubt in your mind that you could function without the chip, I hope this puts it at ease.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not a man who shows a lot of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But he understands feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like...
And he makes space for it, old Pinky.
Yeah. Well, and I like this because he's not telling her, like, get rid of the chip. Change.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you don't need it. It's like... He's not telling her to change what she's like right now.
Yeah.
It's the fact, though, that, like, no matter, like, what she was would decide to have mm-hmm. this chip or not, like, she is a whole, full person
yeah.
in every way. And it's basically, like, giving her permission to decide what she wants her future to be.
Yeah. You've proved something. I hope you've learned something. And whatever happens tomorrow doesn't change those facts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she has a little cry with her medal.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think of Brainlock, dear?
It's an okay episode.
It's an okay episode. We've said so many wonderful things about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what holds it back, unfortunately, is the performance of Lieutenant Fredericks.
That's what I was going to say, and I was trying to figure out how to say it the nicest way possible.
Like,
I don't think she's very good.
She has 2 great moments in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's the when she's freaking out, dying in the flashback,
mm-hmm.
and it's the very end when she's breaking down.
Mm-hmm.
I think she, like, these moments of really heightened emotion she sells, and she's given a character that literally does not have those.
Yeah.
That's such a disservice that's such a mismatch of character and acting ability.
Yeah. And then I think what also doesn't help her, and... it hasn't been a problem in her other scenes through the season, because she has had such little scenes
mm-hmm.
that she's always very forceful in a way that doesn't seem to me natural
mm-hmm.
of how she delivers her lines, right? Because she's supposed to be this very tough and fearless Freddy and stuff, right? So yeah, like everything yeah. she's talking about, she talks about in this very,
yeah.
this is the way, yes, sir, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She has to project so much authority because she is a tiny person.
She's very petite.
Yes.
And because she is front and center for this whole episode and everything is basically played at that, it doesn't, offer any dynamic. And what you can pass is, like, fine in those short scenes. It just, like, oh, this actually isn't that good.
I also think she is not served from... obviously, there has to be a Freddy episode. There should have been one before this point.
Yeah.
But having to jump from a very minor character, like if you look at her roles in the first 5 episodes, mm-hmm. she is a step above furniture, unfortunately. Yeah. And I've been wanting, give me more Freddy, give this actor something to work with, give this character something to do. But the hard jump to main character of the week,
mm-hmm.
even above Hudson... which is rare for this season to have someone above Hudson in a plot. It's a jarring jump.
Yeah.
And that's got to be so hard to deal with.
Well, and So I was going to say at first is, like, they haven't given her any opportunity to build any relationships with anyone else.
Very but true.
She was starting to with Brody, which also makes this a weird episode for, you know, his comments and stuff. Because it's like, I thought we were past that. Mm-hmm. I thought we'd come to an agreement, right? Like, he's seen the light. They've become buddies. She's learned to respect him. He's learned to respect her.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, we backtrack on that, and then it also leaves her with no one in her corner except Hudson.
Right.
And it would be really nice if there was someone else, like, in her corner.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or you were if they played up more of Brody, like, earlier noticing something's wrong, something's off, and, like, trying to, have more conversations with people ahead of time. Like, hey, Lucas.
I know my wingman. Something's wrong here. Yeah.
Like, Tony, I feel like that would have been nice, too.
Because
then you would see, like, while we haven't seen her have relationships, you could see it reflected in, like, has she actually, like, been talking with others? Do they know her enough to know? Or is there someone who's like, oh, no, she's fine, and you realize, like, oh, that person has had no interactions with her.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that could also provide an angle for this episode's three plots to touch each other at all, which they don't.
Yeah.
I mean, the closest they get to the different plot strands interacting is Ford and Henderson happen to be the ones to arrest Dion. That's kind of it.
Yeah.
I mean, what it does well, it does very, very well. And I think different direction, a little bit more of a character massage could have helped Elise Neal do the job that was needed for this that I don't think came out in the end for any of the million reasons that doesn't always happen on TV shows.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, she was given a hard job too, because act this way the whole time and make it dynamic. Well, that's kind of hard to fucking do.
Yeah. You know how hard it is to make a total flat robot dynamic? There's so many bad alien fan films out there because you're comparing them to fucking Michael Fassbender as David.
Mm-hmm.
One of the great film performances of all time.
Yes.
I love him so much.
We should watch that again soon. I've been thinking about how we should watch that again, and you know what I've really been wanting to rewatch? Sunshine.
Now that is a movie that doesn't have any robots or robot-like people in it, but damn, that's a movie.
It's a great movie, and we have not watched that in over a decade, if not more. So, darling, do you have a fish fact?
I've got a Hudson fact.
Okay, tell me about your Hudson fact.
So the J.L. Hudson building was a 33-level department store and office building in Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah.
Headquarters of the Hudson department store chain.
Yeah.
This building featured 2.2 million square feet of space and was the world's tallest department store.
Dang.
The world's largest department store is the Herald Square Macy's in Manhattan. But the J.L. Hudson building was taller.
Is it, like, is the one in Chicago here, like, the third or something? Because, like,
it's really big.
It's really big.
The store itself closed in 1983, although the offices continued to be used until 1986. Then in 1998, the building became the world's largest to be demolished by controlled implosion. 20,000 people watched as it went from this 33-level department store and office to a 60-foot-tall pile of rubble.
I think we watched that.
I remember, in person or on the news?
Like, on the news. Okay. But, I think they had, a live, video news event, where you could watch it, and I think we watched it back when they did that. Like, hey, we're going to interrupt your soap operas to blow up this building, and you can all watch on TV. Like, okay.
Now it's all deadly car chases. So, there's my Hudson fact. Darlin, have you got a fish fact?
Okay, so I'm going to give some insight to our listeners on how I go about finding my fish facts.
Sure.
Because when there's not actually a fish mentioned on the show, I try to pick something and see if it's related to a fish.
Mm-hmm. The Hudson fish.
The Hudson fish, etc. things. So this time I'm like, okay, what have they talked about? They talked about cranberry juice. Is there a cranberry fish?
Is there a cranberry fish?
That just got me recipes for, like, fish with cranberries.
Oh, like a cranberry sauce on
your
fish.
And then I was like, okay, so is there like fish that live in cranberry bogs?
Mm.
And what I learned is that fish don't like to live in cranberry bogs because there's not a lot of oxygen there.
Right, they don't churn up the water. Yeah.
Yeah, and the water's very still. They don't like that. So what I did learn is that in 2020, the U.S., Canada, and Chile produced 97% of the world's consumed cranberries.
Oh.
So happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
There's your fish fact. They don't live in cranberry bogs.
In the show notes, do you want to put your very special, very simple cranberry sauce recipe?
Oh, my, like, cranberry sugar orange juice? Like, the end?
It is very simple. It's yes, very simple.
It's really good. Yeah. Bag of cranberries.
Yeah.
I believe it's a cup of sugar and a cup of orange juice. And then you just, like, fucking boil it.
Mm-hmm.
And they pop. And then if you make it the day before and you put it in the fridge, it thickens on its own.
Yeah.
Because of all the sugar.
Mm-hmm.
It's delicious.
It's really good. So that's that.
That is that.
There have been two big reasons why I've been so excited to record this episode.
Because it's been a while.
There have been five big reasons why I've been excited to talk about this.
We like talking about Sequest.
It is exciting to finally get the Big Freddy episode. Our second new cast member is finally getting some spotlight.
The dog is really cute when we're recording and she's just like passing out on me.
But one of the many, many reasons is I've got a big plug.
Oh.
I got a big, big plug.
Oh. What's the big plug?
So some of you listeners who've been listening to my voice for...
I like how you lowered your voice when you said my voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the last 17 years or so. No, that's because my very best friend from high school and I have been making Let's Plays for all that time. And... we recently launched our latest series to go up. We are playing Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories, the second Kingdom Hearts game that came out for the Game Boy Advance originally. But we're playing the 3D remake for PlayStation.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot more visually dynamic.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a link to the show notes in there. By the time this comes out, there'll be 4 or 5 episodes for you to watch. Mm-hmm. As we talk about the good boys and his duck and dog and losing memories as they go through a big building that looks ridiculous from the outside.
So you should check that out.
You should check that out. We're having a great time. I love it. You will learn the dark secret of Jiminy Cricket.
Fucker couldn't be trusted.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the other reason you were so excited to talk?
Well, because if people leave us a 5-star rating review on Apple Podcasts, which every single person listening should do,
yeah.
I'm going to read it.
Oh.
And I got one.
Oh, that's a long one.
Special for you.
Special for me.
This comes from Andil80, and it is titled, "It is like Elena is in my brain." I just discovered this podcast recently while doing my annual Sequest rewatch. Yes, Elena, there are more of us out there. There are so many rewatch podcasts, I got curious, wondering why no one had done one regarding this masterpiece of a show. Cry laughing emoji.
Oh my god, it is me.
Lo and behold, I had been missing it this whole time. That's not true. We existed exactly 1 year ago, you know, more or less.
Yeah, it hasn't been that long.
It's you only missed it for a maximum of one partial rewatch.
I like to think that they're like, oh man, the world just wasn't complete until we were there. So it seems like longer.
Elena, while I am a little older, I was 12 when the show first aired, I too had your same opinions. I came for Lucas, but stayed for Ortiz. I love hearing that your reactions and thoughts are similar things that I noticed and observed while rewatching through an adult lens. I now know why my parents, who were very anti-TV in kids' bedrooms, suddenly got me a TV for my room when I was 13. I'm pretty sure it's so they didn't have to watch this with me. I'm doing some math and it sounds like your parents hated season 2. They did not like the plants that roared like dinosaurs.
They're like, we can't do this.
I rarely come across anyone who loved the show as much as I did, but when I do, I'll be sending them your way. Thank you so much, Andil80.
Aww.
Andy L80? I don't know. But thank you so much. And thank you for the segue into the second call to action. Do that. Do that thing. Go tell people in your life, in your day-to-day about Whiskers. We share knowledge regarding Sequest.
And like, I don't know, make my day. Because that kind of made my day. I understand why you were so excited to now read that
for
to me.
For weeks I've been hoping to record this with you.
Yeah, because I don't, like, go read any of our reviews. I just wait for you to read them to me. So that's nice.
But yes, it is the holidays, which means road trip season. Mm-hmm. Which means you've got less time at work, probably. Unless you're one of our retail listeners, and oh boy, our hearts are with you.
May the odds be in your favor. I worked retail a few years, and Jesus fucking Christ.
The reason for the season.
Yeah, well, fuck him. Because it fucking sucks. Gap on Michigan Avenue is not a place for the weak.
If you need a topic for small talk, we can be that topic.
Yeah.
And if someone is looking for someone to keep them company as they are, I don't know, whatever you do, doing a 5K with the boys,
baking 4,000 cookies in a weekend.
Yeah, we can help them too, with your recommendation, with your help.
Mm-hmm. You should also go find us on Blue Sky. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We are there as WSKRS, and it's lots of fun over there, and it's another way to, like, engage with us and, like, tell us things.
Mm-hmm. And if you are wondering when life will throw a wrench into our plans and there won't be an episode this week, or when that wrench gets cleared out and there will, that account is where you're going to see those announcements.
Yes.
Along with all the other things that get shared there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Really hoping the wrenches are going to, like, chill the fuck out because this year has been hell. But we'll tell you there.
Hey, some of them were planned.
Some of them were planned. Some of them were for good things. Many of them have not been. And I need a break. Girl needs a break over here.
Oh.
So with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Captain Oliver Hudson,
when's the last time you had sex?
Was there an audience?
Was there? Who was watching?
Can I?
Some people like it that way. Let me tell you, Brody, about this thing called a kink.
Let me tell you about some dirty emails.
Ford just thought that it meant, like, his computer was corrupted, and so he got Lucas to look at it. He thought he had a virus.
He's posting pictures of his laundry to-do pile.
Yeah.
Which is still folded for some reason. Ford, loosen up! Fuck!
Yeah.